Now he had to decide whether to march on Moscow itself. It might have seemed wise to wait through the winter at Smolensk, but that would give the Tsar time to raise a larger army that would prove too hard for Napoleon to handle with his own depleted forces. The French emperor felt certain the Tsar would defend Moscow, the very heart and soul of Russia. Once Moscow fell, Alexander would have to sue for peace, so Napoleon marched his haggard troops still farther east. Now, at last, the Russians turned to face the French in battle, and on September 7th, the two armies clashed near the village of Borodino, a mere 75 miles from Moscow. Napoleon no longer had enough forces or cavalry to attempt his usual flanking maneuver, so he was forced to attack the enemy head-on. The Russians fought bitterly, harder than any army Napoleon had ever faced. Even so, after hours of brutal fighting, the Russians retreated yet again. The road to Moscow lay open, but the Russian army was still intact, and Napoleon's forces had suffered horrific casualties. 7 days later, Napoleon's army, now reduced to 100,000 men, straggled into an undefended Moscow. A French marshal wrote to his wife that the emperor's joy was overflowing. The Russians, he thinks, will sue for peace, and I shall change the face of the world. In earlier years, when he had marched into Vienna and Berlin, he had been met as a conquering hero, with dignitaries turning over to him the keys to their cities. But Moscow was empty, no citizens, no food. A terrible fire broke out almost immediately and lasted 5 days. All of the city's water pumps had been removed, an elaborate sabotage to make Moscow still more inhospitable. Napoleon sent letters to the Tsar offering generous terms of peace. At first, the Russians seemed willing to negotiate, but the weeks went by, and it finally became clear that they were dragging out the talks to buy time to build up their army and to let winter grow closer. Napoleon could not risk staying in Moscow another day. The Russians would soon be able to encircle his now meager force. On October 19th, he marched the remains of his army out of the Russian capital. His goal was to get to Smolensk as fast as possible. Now those undisciplined bands of Cossacks that had harassed him on the road east had formed into larger divisions, guerrilla forces of 500 men, and every day they killed off more and more French soldiers. Marching in constant fear, Napoleon's men rarely slept. Thousands succumbed to fatigue and hunger. Napoleon was forced to lead them past the nightmarish fields of Borodino, still crowded with French corpses, many half-eaten by wolves. The snow began to fall. The Russian winter set in. The French horses died from the cold, and every last soldier had to trudge through the snow on foot. Barely 40,000 made it to Smolensk. The cold was worsening. There was no time to tarry in Smolensk. Through some deft maneuvering, Napoleon managed to get his troops across the Berezina River, allowing them a clear line of retreat to the west. Then, in early December, hearing of a failed coup d'etat at home in France, he left his troops behind and headed for Paris. Of the 450,000 men in his main attack force, some 25,000 made it back. Few among the rest of the army survived as well. Napoleon had miraculously escaped to fight more wars, but he would never recoup his losses in manpower and horses. Russia was indeed his grave. Interpretation. By the time Napoleon invaded Russia, Tsar Alexander I had met him a number of times in previous years and had come to know him quite well. The Emperor Alexander saw was an aggressive man who loved any kind of fight, even if the odds were stacked against him. He needed battles as a chance to put his genius in play. By refusing to meet him in battle, Alexander could frustrate him and lure him into a void. Napoleon's inability to engage his enemy got under his skin. It is human nature to not be able to endure any kind of void. We hate silence, long stretches of inactivity, loneliness. Perhaps this is related to our fear of that final void, our own death. We have to fill and occupy empty space. By giving people nothing to hit, being as vaporous as possible, you play upon this human weakness. Infuriated at the absence not just of a fight, but of any kind of interaction at all, people will tend to chase madly after you, losing all power of strategic thought. It is the elusive side, no matter how weak or small its force, that controls the dynamic.